Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine, and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome inside the clubhouse. Good Saturday morning, Chicago. I am David Haw with Bruce Levine here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And Bruce, there weren't any games this week. There wasn't much to report in the way of scores, but there was a lot going on in terms of news and the direction of the second half of the season and this year for both teams. Cubs get going with their fire sale, I suppose, identifying themselves as sellers, and the White Sox get back in action against the Astros, but a lot of conversation about how aggressive they will be as buyers. Good morning. We will be here until 11 o'clock. How are you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing great, David. Good morning to you, and good morning to our great listeners. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse. He's David Haw. I'm Bruce Levine. We're here for you every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball, 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturday morning. The number to reach us, either text or phone line, is 312-644-6767. And David, you're right. There wasn't a lot going on. The All-Star game was interesting. If you like the Home Run Derby, I think the game itself was a little bit boring, except for maybe the Joe Buck interview with Chris Bryant that brought on some activity from Chris's dad and some commentary. And, of course, the Tim Anderson coming in late to the game and playing in the eighth and ninth inning but not getting an at-bat caused a little bit of a stir. But otherwise, it's all about the trade deadline right now, David, and the additions and subtractions. We saw a subtraction for at least 2021 when Jack Peterson was traded on Wednesday to the Atlanta Braves for a left-handed power hitter named Bryce Ball from the Atlanta Braves farm system. And that cannot be looked at by any stretch of imagination other than the first shot by the Chicago Cubs front office saying, you know what, this is what we have to do to get better. We haven't made a move backwards since the Yu Darvish deal back when they did the salary dump of that back in the late winter. And now the Cub players and the Cub fans have to face the fact that there's going to be some subtractions of names that you've seen for a while and addition of young guys that you've never heard of.
Absolutely true, Bruce. I think that move, because it was the first one and because of the nature of the schedule this week, received a lot of attention and scrutiny, but I don't think that people should confuse that with significance. That was just the first deal of a Class A first baseman who may turn into a productive major league hitter, but he may not. It just so happened that he was traded for Jock Peterson as the Cubs began the process of unloading players and shedding salary and trying to get assets in return. So last night, Friday, back in action, the White Sox lose 7-1 on the south side to the Astros. Lance McCullers was dealing, 7 innings, 10 strikeouts for the Sox. They were just never able to get it going offensively. They are now 0-5 against the Astros. Meanwhile, the Cubs out in Arizona a little bit later night for you, Bruce, and people watching, but it was worth the wait because they come out on top against a very bad, historically bad, perhaps, Diamondback team. They beat them 5-1. Kyle Hendricks, major league leading 12th win, correct? He is now 12-4, as consistent as they come. But let's face it, most of the focus on the Cubs is what's next and who's going to be the next guy saying his goodbyes. And I think that, you know, there's a very much a sense of inevitability when you and uncertainty when you're talking about some of these Cubs players that we have come to get to know pretty well.
And as a part of our show, David, today we'll talk to Bob Nightingale, the Bigfoot from USA Today, that's plugged in to Major League Baseball all over the place. He'll join us at 9:30. Sean Marshall from the Marquee Sports Network will join us at 10 o'clock to talk some Cub baseball. We will talk Cubs and Sox all program long. And David, you know, some interesting things, takeaways from last night's game. Let's start with the Chicago White Sox. As you mentioned, now 0-5 against what many consider to be the best baseball team in the American League, the Houston Astros, who represent, if you watch that game and if you watch any of their games other than when they play the White Sox, they bring a tremendously balanced, talented lineup to the ballpark every day and a well-pitched game every day. No rotation in baseball has a better ERA than the Houston Astros. The White Sox are second. So this is a really good ball club. And the White Sox have not been able to be their equal at this point. It's five games, but it's been total domination in those five games. The White Sox have been in a few of them. But some of these games ended up like last night's, where it was a close game. Cease was pitching extremely well to start the game, striking everybody out. And then all of a sudden, one inning and it gets away. So that 7-1 game was a lot closer, according to Tony La Russa, than it ends up appearing. But at the end of the day, you end up with a score and another loss to a team that you want to feel a little bit better about playing in a playoff situation a couple months from now. Right now, I don't think the White Sox can feel very good about themselves when they go up against the Astros.
Which is remarkable, Bruce, and I understand, and I don't disagree with anything that you said, but here the White Sox are beginning the second half of this season, 18 games now, over 500. And what you just said, I don't think any White Sox fan would doubt. They don't feel very good about themselves, or it's hard to feel good about the White Sox. They're 18 games over 500, and yet you have these questions that persist because of the record against teams that are 500 or better. And I think right now, that's according to WhiteSox.com, 16-25 against teams like that. So I guess how legitimate are those concerns for a roster that seems set, a pitching rotation that is, you know, pretty consistent, and a bullpen that remains a little shaky? But is that a fair question to ask at this point of the season?
Well, it is. You know, look, we're not talking all doom and gloom here. They have the biggest lead in baseball. They have an eight-game lead in a division where it's hard. Just take the White Sox out of it. It's hard to imagine Cleveland being good enough to be maybe over a 500 team the rest of the rest of the season. So with that in mind, you know, we're pretty much surrendering the division to the White Sox. Now the goal is to stay hungry. We have some sound from Tony La Russa yesterday, and I'm alerting our great producer Sean Anderson about it. And Tony here will tell you what the mindset is of the White Sox going into the second half.
We're not the hunter. We're hunting wins. We're going to go out there every series. We're going to hunt wins. If the other team is hunting wins too, that's great. It's supposed to be, but we're not defending anything. We're aggressively offending, trying to get wins.
And that is the mindset that he has to sell to this team. You know, can you get complacent with a big lead, knowing that you are probably going to win that division? Tony La Russa has made a Hall of Fame career out of not letting teams get complacent. So that is his charge. That's the coaching staff's charge in the second half here. They have a lot of guys that are hungry that have never been there, you know, other than maybe a little bit of the playoffs last year. So I don't think it's going to be all that difficult. I wonder what your take is on it.
I would submit that it's going to be easier, and that's a relative term, but and maybe easy is the wrong way to put it because nothing's easy in baseball. But I think that it will help the Sox combat that complacency that you correctly identify as a concern when you start to, number one, get some players back from the being out. Eloy Jimenez is on his way sooner rather than later, maybe in the next 2 weeks, Bruce. That's going to be a charge. That's going to be a jolt, right? A lift if you're struggling, you know, mentally or you're not hitting as a lineup. So I think that's number one. The other thing is that Luis Robert is going to be on the way back. You know, you figure at some point Grandal is in September, maybe down the road, but until you get to that point, I think it's just not on the coaching staff, but on the front office. Now you've got to recognize what you need to do in terms of if you want to keep that hunter mindset mm-hmm. that Tony La Russa referenced, take that to the trade conversations and take that to your roster. Go out and aggressively make a move or moves that puts yourself in a position to remove some of these doubts that have come up when you play good teams like the Astros. That means bullpen, that means second baseman, and that might mean an extra outfield bat.
Yeah, and you might want to throw in a catcher as well, a veteran catcher. You don't necessarily want to count on Grandal coming back, okay? Because it's a knee surgery. It's a position where you have to get up and down 8 million times a game. So from that perspective, I would say, you know, Collins and Zavala are really good young catchers, but you need a veteran catcher going down the stretch. You need a veteran catcher to count on going into the playoffs. I'm sure Collins can handle most of it, but you don't want two basically rookie catchers catching, a large amount of games at the major league level pretty much for the first time in a pennant run in a playoff series being exposed. They're not supposed to be veteran catchers. They're young catchers. They're still learning. Collins' growth chart has been outstanding. He has really gotten a lot better. But I don't think you can count on Grandal coming back and catching. He might have to just be a DH from time to time when he comes back. So therefore, I think a catcher is much more important than most people are talking about because of the fact that, you know, a veteran catcher to me is really important. In games like last night, Collins did the best he could in that inning that got away from them. But, you know, Bummer was throwing balls that were breaking like crazy and in the dirt and getting away. And it became an inning that, separated the game and changed the tenor of the game totally, David. So, when you see these things happening, you know that a little help from a veteran behind the plate is going to be important.
Meanwhile, the tenor of the conversation with the Cubs is entirely different. We know the context for this season after Jed Hoyer declared the Cubs as being sellers a week ago Thursday, and that process began, as we mentioned, with Jock Peterson. But it's starting as the Cubs reconvene to weigh on this team, I think, or at least it hovered over every conversation, over every game. And I think that everyone knows what's going on here. Now, Anthony Rizzo last night has been the source of some of this conversation. He hits a home run, which is, was nice for the Cubs to see against a Diamondback team that is bad and they should sweep. And all those things are true. But, Bruce, I'll let you kind of set the scene because post-game, I think we heard from Anthony Rizzo. Just be as honest as he can be, given the uncertain realities that, players like him, players like Javi Baez, who were mentioned in a tweet, I think, from John Heyman, talking about maybe they will be signing contract extensions with the Cubs or discussing those if before they're put on the trade market. So how would you describe what Rizzo said after the game about all the stuff swirling around the clubhouse?
Yeah, David. So, the Heyman text, and John Heyman is one of the very best reporters out there, and you hear him all the time on the Score. He's not going to make something up about that the Cubs are seriously considering, over the next 2 weeks here, changing the tenor of the talks about contracts and offering new deals possibly to Baez and Rizzo that haven't been discussed at this point. I don't think John Heyman just makes that up. So with that in mind, two things come to mind. Okay, one, the Cubs are making their final offer because they want to have a clear mind about being able to trade both of those guys before the deadline. Or two, they're not going to trade them, and they're going to continue to look at these guys as pieces to the puzzle going forward in their plans for 2022 and beyond. There is a real good scenario where none of the three guys, Bryant, Rizzo, or Baez, get traded. And there are a number of reasons why that might take place. And some of them might be their plans for these players in the future, or the fact that they think they will offer a qualifying offer and take a draft pick for him if they can't sign them in between the time of right now and November when free agency begins. And even after that, there's still that possibility. So with all that said, after the game, myself and other reporters talked to Anthony Rizzo after his night where he tied for sixth with Aramis Ramirez and club record in home runs and 10th in extra base hits for a career with the Cubs. And I asked him, you know, straight out, I said, are you able to block this stuff out, or do you believe that you will get a contract offer from the Cubs right now?
You know, right now, I think especially these next 2 weeks, just day to day focusing on baseball. All the reports and rumors flying from now until then, probably put a full scrapbook together and see the roller coaster that it's going to take everyone on. So for me in my position, it's just staying one day at a time and not really worrying about what's going to happen. What's going to happen is going to happen, and none of us have any control of it.
What are your thoughts about that, David?
Yeah. Well, I think he's got to take the professional approach. My thoughts are that when you see these reports about whether the Cubs are inclined to go to Anthony Rizzo and Javi Baez to see if they can sign them long term before they trade them or before they put them on the trade market more aggressively, I think I understand why, kind of, Bruce, because I think Javi might be easier to sign. The number will be lower because of the shortstop market in the offseason. I think Rizzo has some intangibles where they might feel like it's worth keeping around, and there might not be a market in the trade, in the trade market that gives you as much in return. But I do wonder if you're going to identify a priority. I think a lot of Cub fans say, "Well, geez, Chris Bryant means more to this team moving forward than these two guys would in terms of overall value." But what this said to me more than anything was, the Cubs recognize how difficult or impossible Chris Bryant will be to sign to a long-term extension. So this was almost just a reinforcement of the inevitability facing Cub fans in the franchise.
Let's listen to Rizzo again on the subject of can this stuff be blocked out, or is there some reality to him signing a contract?
I just think you just come in with the right mindset, just trying to win tomorrow. Get onto a good winning ways. We're all hungry for that. Going into the break, it was just a lot of us were down, and having that reset and just winning today. And it's you pull on all in your past experiences and being around and just knowing how this works from afar. You just know it's all going to be speculation until something actually happens.
That's a challenge, Bruce. That's a challenge. And I think that goes back to, as much as we applauded Jed Hoyer for being as transparent as he was, The other side of the coin of that, and I guess the flip side of being so transparent and open about your intentions, are your entire clubhouse now knows that you basically have said the second half doesn't matter. What happens on the scoreboard is irrelevant, because this team and organization is all about getting ready for the future, and we have placed all those priorities about the future ahead of anything about the present. Good luck, David Ross, getting your team to focus under those circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, David. I would just say that these guys are championship caliber players who have gotten very used to winning, maybe not the World Series every year, but certainly being in the playoffs. And there's a lot of pride there. So this is a direct challenge to the guys that are left there. Are they good enough? You know, I mean, you hope that they can beat Arizona this weekend. They're the worst team in memory for a long time. They have a chance to do something very special, and that is not win 40 games this year, would be the all-time, you know, the all-time record with the 62 Mets.
Is special, but the right word there?
Yeah, it's special. It's memorable.
Memorable.
I pulled up the 62 Mets for you right away. You know, winning 40 games. I mean, that's hard to do, you know, in a baseball season, not to win at least, you know, 60, 70 games.
Even was Ed Cranepool the first baseman on that team?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Was he? Okay. Yes, I think I remember hearing of Ed Cranepool.
Thanks a lot, David. Thanks a lot.
No, but you don't want to be compared to the 62 Mets, and you should beat teams if you're the Cubs, who are on the brink of history like that.
I think the point here is that they can walk out of there over 500 going into St. Louis on Monday.
Okay? What does it mean?
Well, it means that they have pride and that they feel they're a better team. Look, you take the three teams out of the National League West, right? Okay. Yeah. What teams are significantly better? Maybe the Mets, but they're having trouble separating from a very mediocre division. What team in the National League is really that much better than the Cubs?
Brewers with their starting pitching right now.
So I'll give you the three teams in the West and the Brewers, maybe the Mets because of their pitching. But, you know, that's five teams. There's another 10 teams that the Cubs are pretty much equal to right now.
Your point
is valid.
They don't
want to be equal to them, right?
Your point is valid, and it's a good one, Bruce. I guess my point would be to counter that. They could sweep the Diamondbacks and go on a seven-game winning streak, and I don't think it would change Jed Hoyer's priorities, right?
I agree. And maybe Cub fans can chime in and tell us whether they think they should or not, whether they should continue to try to win this year and not concentrate on the future. But, you know, to be fair about this, and this is not necessarily just at the feet of Jed Hoyer, this situation with the free agents, with Baez, with Bryant, with Rizzo, it should have been dealt with before this. And we do know there have been conversations about contracts for many years, since 2016 for these players. If the contracts weren't good enough for him and the front office knew that, it was really pretty much incumbent upon them at a certain point to not get into this situation of them being 2 months away from free agency, okay? I mean, they did a terrific job, Hoyer and Epstein, of giving the Cubs a competitive playoff team every year. You know, they should be applauded for that. But if you can't sign your Bigfoot players, at some point they have to be traded. Not 2 months before the season is going to end and they're going to become free agents. Again, I don't blame the Cubs for this because it takes two to tango as far as signing contracts. I know they made big, big offers to all of these players at one point or another and still may be doing that. So I applaud them for that. But you do have to separate yourself from these players if you don't think they're signable.
It is a tough balance to strike, trying to look ahead and do the right thing for the future while competing in the present. And the Cubs just found themselves running out of time right now, frankly. So we will see who is next, and the rumors will continue. And the guy who has been reporting on a lot of these trades and trade rumors is Bob Nightingale from USA Today. Bruce, we have him coming up next. We also have later in the show until 11 o'clock at 10, we'll check in with Sean Marshall of Marquee. Does a terrific job breaking down the Cubs. We have a lot more conversations. Your phone calls 312-644-6767. With Bruce Levine, I'm David Haw. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score with Bruce Levine. I am David Haw here until 11 o'clock as we are every Saturday morning talking baseball on The Score. And at this time, we are pleased to bring in Bob Nightingale from USA Today. And Bob joins us on the guest hotline sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks, David. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks for getting up this morning. No, it was a late one. You were, I believe, at the Cub game with the Diamondbacks, and certainly you know the context of this Cub second half, what Jed Hoyer said, and what the process that began with unloading Jock Peterson. I guess, Bob, let's start there. What do you think the Jock Peterson deal said about the Cubs' direction in terms of how quickly they're going to try to execute the plan that Jed Hoyer discussed?
Yeah, just kind of verifying what Jed Hoyer said, that it's time to sell off. It's not going to happen this year. So, kind of interesting that they sell off, and the Atlanta Braves, who have about the same playoff percentage odds, are still kind of trying to hang in the race. The difference, of course, talking to Cubs people, is that Atlanta's in the NL East, which is a horrific division in the Central. The Brewers aren't going away, and the Reds are hanging around. That realistically, they have no choice but to start dumping guys.
Bob, yesterday I reported on our website, 670thescore.com, that Craig Kimbrell has five suitors of a serious nature, and that the likelihood of him getting traded is real. When you hear that there's five legitimate teams involved for a guy like Kimbrell, from your experience, does that tell you that it'll go down to the last minute because of trying to get the best bid possible from these teams from Hoyer?
Yeah, I think the situation where, you always see it, where teams ask for the moon and then, at the end, settle for whoever's going to give the best offer. So they're going to get their, best package in the last couple of days before the end of the month. I'd be very surprised if he's traded before, say, July 28th, July 29th. The teams I keep hearing are, Philadelphia, already blown 22 saves. Obviously, everybody knows how aggressive David Dombrowski is. San Francisco Giants, who are for real, they're not going to fade away. And I don't discount the Houston Astros, who could certainly use him as well. I just don't know if they'll give up the prospects to do so.
Bob, so you talk about Kimbrel, and you look at the suitors for him, and you wonder how long they'll hold on to him. But I think there's a sense that, okay, everybody needs a closer. Everybody can fit a bullpen arm like that into the equation. They'll find a way to pay for it. I wonder if all this conversation that we're having about Chris Bryant and Javi Baez, to a lesser degree, and certainly Anthony Rizzo, guys who are foundational pieces and have been it, are we going to be here at the, in another week talking about how the Cubs have dealt, whether Kimbrel, Ryan Tepera, Andrew Chafin, because everybody could use a bullpen piece? Do you think that is going to be the wave of moves because of, you look around baseball and all the rumors in every baseball city seems to be, well, they could add a bullpen arm, and the Cubs have a few that could help some teams.
No, you're right, David, and those guys will, they'll be moved for sure and get a little decent return for them. Just because, like you said, everybody needs bullpen help. Chris Bryant's case, as good as Bryant is, you're not going to get much return. I mean, he's making $19 million. So, you're still going to have to pay about, $6, $7 million of that thing. Just a short little rental. I still think he makes, great sense in New York Mets. I don't discount the Giants. But Kimbrel may get, because they get more for Kimbrel than any player that's traded throughout baseball in the next 2 weeks, particularly the fact he's got that $60 million club option. So I think, they may end up getting more for Kimbrel than everybody else combined. I don't see the other guys moving. I don't see Javi Baez moving. I haven't heard his name at all. And, a lot of teams have first baseman. I think Anthony Rizzo, stays put and stays in Chicago in a contract extension, sometime this winter.
Bob, let's move to the south side of Chicago, where the White Sox have a huge lead in their division. I don't think anyone in baseball that observes the game thinks that Cleveland can stay with it, with absorbing all the injuries they've had to pitchers and the fact that the front office is just not going to add any more offense to that team. That said, when you look at the White Sox and you see that they've been dominated so far by Houston in five games, is it incumbent upon Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn to go out there and add a couple pieces to that bullpen there to solidify what they're able to do going forward?
Yeah, the bullpen's been disappointing. I mean, remember in spring training, it was like, this could be the best bullpen in all of baseball. And, outside of Hendricks, been big-time disappointment. So, yeah, I think they'll go get a piece there. I think they'll go get a, a second baseman as well. You know, whether it's sliding Trevor Story over to second base, or you know, filling in with Escobar, or you know, possibly Frazier. And then I think too, they got to go get a catcher. You know, they were looking at Stephen Vogt last night, the Diamondbacks, and Vogt, of course, got traded late last night to Atlanta, but they were monitoring him as well. You know, which makes you, you know, makes you think that they got to get somebody there. They don't trust what they have, not knowing when Grandal comes back.
Yeah, we were so, David and I were talking about that prior to you coming on, the fact that the White Sox, and especially La Russa, you know, the La Russa Duncan years, now the La Russa, you know, new pitching coach years going on with Evan Katz there, with Ethan Katz there. You always have to have a veteran catcher, don't you, for a team that's going to go to a championship?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I think if they had their brothers, they would have been, you know, they could have kept James McCann and maybe, you know, Dalton Grandal during the winter. And they love the way, you know, McCann, you know, is behind the plate and stuff. And you see how the pitchers love throwing to Collins, but you want some more offensive output there. And, you know, you fear too, if you're playing a lot, you know, is he gonna wear it down? But you love to have some veteran behind there too. And I think that's why Vogt, you know, had interest in him. Who knows? Maybe if Atlanta falls out of the race here next 2 weeks, you know, they flip Vogt again.
I understand that we're talking with Bob Nightingale from USA Today, who is on all things baseball. Bob, I understand that, and Bruce, I respect that. But I feel like with the White Sox, it's like you have a luxury car and you're worried about the hood ornament. I mean, they're going to go places, and if they're able to get a veteran catcher, great. But to me, I think the bigger concern, Bob, and you mentioned this, and I think it kind of varies on the order depending on what week it is and maybe how the conversations go. Escobar, Frazier, and Trevor Story. Those are the three names you hear most often associated with the White Sox and their search for a second baseman because of the loss of Nick Madrigal. They're going to get outside reinforcements with Eloy and Luis Robert coming back. The same's not true at second base. If you were to rank right now, this morning, in order of likelihood that the Sox could get one of those three guys, how would it go?
Well, it would still be Escobar number one. I mean, it's pretty much all but agreed on a trade about, you know, 3 weeks ago. And then Escobar hurt his quadricep. He's still not running 100%. And then the reliever, the Diamondbacks are getting back. He had a little problem, had to get a cortisone shot. So that trade could happen, you know, at any time. That's going to be the cheapest trade as well, in a sense, you know, they're only giving up a reliever for him, so it wasn't a high price tag. I think with Story, they'd love to have Story, but now you're talking about, you know, you're going to have to, you know, pick up about, you know, $6 or $7 more million, you know, after already swallowing Adam Eanes' contract, and they're going to want a lot for him. If they don't get a ton for him, they're not moving him. So, you know, Bill Schmidt, you know, their interim GM, made that clear during the All-Star break. And Frazier, same thing with another year of control after this. The Pirates are going to want a lot for him. And, you know, with Madrigal coming back next year, you know, you don't need Frazier, you know, around in 2022. So Escobar makes the most sense. He can play third base if you want to. You can have him play, you know, a little bit in the outfield too. Certainly he's the Diamondbacks clubhouse leader, and he would be a great fit chemistry-wise in that clubhouse.
Just a few more minutes with Bob Nightingale of USA Today joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. Bob, nationally, I think there's a story brewing in New York, and, you know, Yankees win, lose, or draw are always a big story. What would you say the viability of rumors that both Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone are in serious trouble there if the Yankees don't get straightened out and make themselves somewhat of a contender here in the last half of the season?
Well, I think Boone's and Rolfell both miss the playoffs. I'd be surprised if he comes back. Cashman, you know, longer leash, so he stays. I'd be shocked if he got let go. But I think in Boone's case, they have to make the playoffs. I don't see that happening. I really don't. I think they're done. They're, you know, they're 9 games back.
You know, Boston's not going away. Tampa's not going away. You know, Toronto's just going to get better and better. So, I mean, the team wasn't constructed well. You know, I don't know how you don't have a, you know, big left-handed bat, you know, playing at Yankee Stadium. I mean, Schwarber right. would have been a great, great fit for those guys. So, but yeah, I think, you know, Boone and you know, Troy Lovello here in Arizona, you know, are probably the two managers on the biggest hot seats.
In the Cashman case, and I've been a huge fan and known Brian for 30 years. He's been one of the greatest general managers in baseball history. But, you know, as you just pointed out, the team is poorly constituted. And I think, you know, the contract, you know, to their biggest slugger who can't stay healthy most of the years is probably going to drag them down for many more years to come. It's just you know, it's just the Stanton contract continues to, you know, rear its ugly head. And the fact that they aren't very left-handed at all and they're a slow team, that's got to be on Brian, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. I mean, obviously the ownership signed off on, you know, Stanton contract, but, you know, shoot, that cost him about $260 million. You know, he hasn't played the outfield in 2 years. I mean, the greatest things ever happened to the St. Louis Cardinals and the San Francisco Giants is that Stanton turned down those trades. He had the 10-5, he had the no trade clause and turned down deals to both of them, you know, which, you know, very lucky for those two. But yeah, those big contracts can just, you know, decimate a franchise. I mean, the Angels, you know, people talk about the Pujols contract. Well, the new Pujols contract is Anthony Rendon. You know, they're already miserable thinking they're going to have that many years left with Rendon. He's on the date, you know, injury list for the third time this year. You know, we just invest that money in the pitching. You know, same thing with the Yankees. They should have, you know, not got Stanton, invest that money in other things as well.
So, Bob, I want to go back to the Cubs for a moment. If you had to look at the Chris Bryant market and how that has, you know, will develop or has developed, you hear the Mets, you hear the Nationals as being teams rumored to have interest in Chris Bryant. Who has the best prospect package that they could offer the Cubs, and how likely do you think it is that the Cubs actually move Chris in the next 2 weeks?
Well, I think they'll definitely move Bryant. I really do. I think it's either going to be the Mets or the Giants. I don't believe the Nationals for a second. I don't, you know, they're really not even in the race. They're hanging around, but they're falling apart. I mean, they just gave up 24 runs last night. So, you know, I think people put the Nationals together just because there's so many boorish clients already there. The Mets are the ones, they're not afraid to blow past the luxury tax. He'd be an ideal fit there just because of his versatility. Maybe a nice fit, too, with the Giants. I don't discount Bryant signing a free agent contract with the Giants. I think he's their a perfect type of a player there. But I would go Mets 1, Giants 2. You know, and the Cubs aren't going to get a ton back for him, you know, just because of his contract and everything else. So, but, you know, I think they're going to get more back if they hold on to him and get a first-round draft pick next year.
Staying with the Cubs, do you think that there's a possibility that Wilson Contreras could end up being a guy that teams either ask about or the Cubs are willing to deal?
Well, they were very aggressive letting teams know they were willing to trade him during the winter, last winter. And Atlanta was very interested, just, you know, couldn't work out the package. I think if they move him, it's going to be this winter. I don't see it. I don't see it right now. I just don't see that one team out there saying, you know, I got to have this starting catcher. So I think he stays put. And I think Rizzo stays put, and I think Baez stays put as well.
Bob, we appreciate you joining us, always doing a great job. I imagine you're going to be talking a lot of Chicago baseball here and writing about it very much in USA Today over the next couple of weeks. Thanks again for joining David and myself today.
Thanks, Bob.
My pleasure. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, David. Take care, guys.
Take care.
Bob Nightingale, USA Today. He is on top of all things Cubs and Sox and all things around the league, Bruce. And, you know, got some very interesting feedback in terms of what teams may be entering the mix for Chris Bryant, Craig Kimbrell. Before we break, Bruce, you did reference your story on 670thescore.com about Kimbrell and the five teams who have shown interest. Could you elaborate? Do you have a sense of which team might have the best package and which team might make the most sense?
Right now, you know, it appears that the Houston Astros are a team that has really taken center stage about possible prospects and just this very big piece. I mean, Kimbrel, if you look at it realistically, David, Kimbrel is the best bullpen guy in baseball since the last month of 2020. He's just unhittable. You watch him come in last night. The batter shouldn't even taken a bat to the plate with him. I mean, that's how dominant Kimbrel is right now. So he is a difference maker for these five teams: Houston, the New York Mets, the Boston Red Sox, the Oakland A's, the San Francisco Giants. These are teams that I referred to in the story on 670thescore.com yesterday that are serious about him. And as Bob Nightingale pointed out, when you have that many teams going after you, it's incumbent upon Jed Hoyer to go ahead and milk this thing as long as he can. Make sure that he doesn't get beat on a couple of these teams settling for someone else. But you got the primary bullpen guy in all of baseball available, a difference maker, a guy that can take you to and win a World Series. You have to get something really good for him, and I think the Cubs will.
He is the number one trade piece in all of baseball right now, the most coveted, I think, player on the market before the July 30th deadline, Bruce. And nice job. Astros, Mets, Red Sox, A's, and Giants are the five teams that Bruce Levine identified being interested in Craig Kimbrel, the Cubs closer. Check it out, 670thescore.com. And, Bruce, when we come back, we're going to talk about another closer on the other side of town. He had a very fun interview on Friday afternoon here on The Score, and we will bring you some of that next here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I am David Hall with Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. We've got Sean Marshall coming up at the top of the hour for the Marquee Sports Network. Bruce, and we're talking relievers, right? We're talking about Kimbrel to Liam Hendricks, and Liam Hendricks, the fine Sox closer, was on The Score on Friday afternoon with Mark Grody and Chris Ronji, who were filling in for Danny Parkins and Matt Spiegel. Very entertaining fellow, and he delivered yet again. Very interesting what he had to say about how closers are being used these days.
I don't necessarily need the ninth inning, but I still believe that it doesn't matter who's coming up in the seventh or the eighth or the ninth. The ninth inning, the three outs in the ninth are the hottest ones to get, regardless of if it's 7-8-9 or if it's 2-3-4. It doesn't matter. For whatever reason, those last three outs, it just comes down to the fact that sometimes the opposition just can smell it, they can sniff it, whatever it is, I have no idea. But those three outs at the end of the game tend to be a lot harder. but I couldn't care less which inning I pitched. If their matchups come in and I'm ready, like they need me in the seventh, I'll be ready in the seventh. They need me in the sixth, I'll be ready in the sixth. It doesn't matter. I just want to pitch. So I just wait down there and wait for the phone to ring. And as soon as the phone rings, I get it going no matter what.
Bruce, I got to ask you, I don't think I would recommend the seventh or the sixth or even the eighth on rare occasion. Could you see the Sox getting into the conversation for a closer because of Liam Hendricks' ability to pitch whenever and not be one of these closers that is locked in and having to pitch the ninth all the time? Or is that ridiculous?
I think there's 54 million reasons why that is not going to happen. he is their back end guy. And I don't think, you know, this is just my perception. Take it for what mm-hmm. it's worth. I don't think Hendricks could function very well if he wasn't the closer. If he wasn't the main act, I don't think he could do it.
I agree with you. That's why I brought it up, because a guy we both respect a lot, Paul Sullivan, wrote in the Tribune a good column in the wake of the news, I recommend it, last week about why the Sox need to go out and get in the Kimbrel conversation, right? And you've heard that suggested about why the Sox might be able to. I don't like the Cubs-Sox idea, and I also think what you just said is one of the biggest reasons why. Neither Kimbrel nor Liam Hendricks are as effective for whatever reason when they're not in the ninth inning. And that's got to be something you remember when you're talking about these possibilities.
It's the same situation with Trevor Story. You don't bring in a star shortstop when you already have a star shortstop, okay? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. You don't move him to second base. Sure, you could use his bat, and he could be a quality hitter for you. But you change the dynamic for him. You make your own shortstop look over his own shoulder for a couple months. It's too funky. You know, it just doesn't work.
I know
you want him. But this, you know, this isn't, you know, it's not all-star baseball. It's not Strat-O-Matic. You know, it's not a baseball game. It's human beings playing the game, David. You have to really care about how they respond to people that they bring in.
Closers seem a little bit more touchy about the ninth inning than maybe an infielder would about moving over. But that is a very good point and a good counter. Worthy of further discussion, Bruce, but we're going to shift gears when we come back. We're going to get to the Cubs and what's going on with them. And just as a player, from somebody in that clubhouse's perspective, what it would be like to have all this swirling around. Sean Marshall can refer to his playing days. He does a terrific job at Marquee Sports Network. He will join us next on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.